Hello, everyone. This is the New Rules Podcast, and I'm your host, Dimitri Symes Jr. Today, we're going to give you another update on the crisis in Gaza. In particular, we're going to look at the situation surrounding Rafah, which is becoming more and more dire. We're also going to talk about the continued risk of escalation, particularly in southern Lebanon. To help us unpack these issues, I'm very pleased to welcome a longtime friend of the program, Professor Saeed Mohammed Marandi. Professor Marandi, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Professor Marandi, I want to begin our conversation with Rafah, because we've obviously seen a lot of death and destruction in Gaza over the past few months, more than 30,000 Palestinians killed, many of them children. And now Israeli forces are preparing to attack the town of Rafah, which is sheltering about 1.5 million refugees. Are we on the brink of a new humanitarian crisis?
The humanitarian crisis is ongoing. It could escalate, but we already have well over 30,000 Palestinians who've been murdered. Many thousands are under the rubble. Many have died due to illness and malnutrition. And well over 30,000 have officially been killed by the Israeli regime. So if you put them all together, it could be well over 40,000, 50,000 people died directly or indirectly as a result of these atrocities. Of course, if the Israeli regime tries to take southern Gaza, then there would be many more deaths because, as you rightly pointed out, a huge number of Gazans have moved to the south, and the population, which in the south was, I think, between 200,000 and 300,000 before, is now 1.5 million Palestinians. So it could get much worse, but every day, the Israeli regime is murdering well over 100 people on average.
Yeah, I mean, just when you look at the situation at Rafah, I'm not, given the fact that you have so many people in such cramped conditions, it's hard to imagine any sort of military operation that could take place without inflicting massive civilian casualties.
Yes, but when we look at the South African complaint that was submitted to the International Court of Justice, and we read what Israeli officials have said, the Israeli president, the prime minister, the minister of defense, the speaker of the Knesset, the deputy speaker, parliamentarians, government officials, ministers, military officials, they're all calling for genocide. They are all committed to carrying out a Holocaust, an ethnic cleansing. They want to exterminate the Palestinian population in Gaza. They want to kill as many as they can and have the rest expelled based upon their own statement. This is not taking into account what we've seen on television. This is taking into account what they said explicitly. The Israeli Prime Minister, at least on occasion, openly used biblical references to say that the Palestinians must be wiped out. The President said that there are no innocents in Palestine. The Israeli President said no innocents. That means children are not innocent. The Minister of Defense said he's going to cut off water, food, from the very beginning, fuel, medicine, and all supplies. That's in order to create starvation. So while they're massacring people 24 hours a day, they're also starving them. This is all intention. It's a part of a policy. They are preventing food from coming in from Egypt. And the Egyptian regime, of course, is very much influenced by the United States. And therefore, what we are seeing is a huge atrocity, unprecedented in human history in the sense that it's taking place really in front of our eyes. In the past, we would hear about genocide, like in Yemen. Over the last decade, the Americans and the Europeans were assisting with genocide in Yemen. But we didn't see all that much of it. Now we're seeing it 24 hours a day unfold. We're seeing it unfold in front of our eyes, and the West continues to support the Israeli regime. They fund it, they provide weapons and ammunition in order to further the genocide, and they cut off aid to the UN to further the starvation in Gaza. This is not something that the Israeli regime is doing it by itself. This is something that the collective West is carrying out against the people of Palestine.
As we near a potential catastrophe in Rafah, it's worth noting that Biden's messaging seems to be all over the place. First, he said that Israel invading Rafah would cross a red line. Then almost immediately, he walked that statement back. What do you make of these seemingly chaotic statements coming out of Washington?
The United States, from the very beginning, fully supported the genocide. And that's why the Western media, the American media, European media, from the very beginning, spread false accusations about mass rape and about children being beheaded. And anyone who looks at the grim work being carried out by the Gray Zone or the Islamic Intifada, among others, they'll see that these stories were all false. But the Western media used those stories in order to prepare the ground for this genocide. They wanted to prepare a global audience, or at least a Western audience, for the destruction of Gaza, for the annihilation of the people of Gaza. And so Biden, from the very beginning, was fully supporting this. He's been sending weapons and bombs 24 hours a day to the Israelis. But what he wants to do is to prevent popular opinion from turning against him, especially in the United States. So he's as people get, even in the United States, are getting more angry because of the ongoing genocide, despite the fact that the American media really prevents people from knowing the truth. But it is getting through. And so especially among young people those who were more especially affiliated or those who lean more towards the Democratic Party, the anger has been increasing dramatically. So what he's been trying to do is to pretend that he cares about Palestinian lives. He doesn't. He has done nothing to protect Palestinians. He's done nothing to alleviate the situation in Gaza. He wants the genocide to continue. But he has to provide lip service. He has to be seen to be otherwise. So, for example, the airdrop, which were just show, they actually killed a number of people because the boxes fell on ordinary dozens, whether it was intentional or not. But the airdrop had no impact on the salvation. It was just for media. It was just to show that he didn't want to see Gaza starve, but he does. He wants to see them starve. And these red lines and these statements that he makes, even the statement that he made with a hot mic in Congress, I think that was staged too. That was most probably staged. He wanted to create this image that he's opposed to what the Israelis are doing. But actions speak louder than words. He is fully on board with what's going on in Gaza, and he's just as responsible for the genocide as he is anyone else, whether in Israel or in Washington.
And on that point, it really does seem that throughout the crisis, although the United States has tried to publicly distance itself from Israel's actions, it never really tried to use the enormous leverage that it had. And, you know, I think the whole humanitarian aid situation is a perfect example of that. Because instead of demanding that Israel open land corridors for trucks carrying humanitarian aid. Biden seems to be pushing this peculiar idea of the United States building a port in Gaza from which humanitarian aid would then be delivered to the people of Gaza.
Yes, and as we speak, people are starving. So if there is going to be a port, it will be after everyone has already died. But certain that any port will only be created to help the Israeli occupation. The Americans have no intention of helping the people of Gaza. Whatever they're doing with the consent of Netanyahu. And that, I think, explains everything. So on the one hand, the Americans are helping carry out the genocide. And on the other hand, they are pretending to support the Palestinian people. But as you rightly point out, if he wanted to stop it, it just needs one phone call. If he just called Netanyahu and says it finishes now, he would be over. But American politicians in Washington and the president of the United States, they are not going to ever move in that direction because they are definitely controlled by donors and individuals, whether it's the Christian Zionists or Jewish Zionists that have funded them since 30, 40 years ago, at least in the case of Biden. He's been funded by these donors for many decades. So he's not going to choose humanity over his billionaire donor class or the billionaire donor class. He's not going to choose Palestinian or Gazan children over the people who control the media and who control power in the United States. That's not going to happen. So he will allow Netanyahu to do what he does. His political establishment in Washington, they are all on board, and it will continue. The only thing that will stop the Israeli regime is the resistance. And the resistance, of course, I'm not include Lebanon, and Yemen, Iran, Iraq, and Syria. All of these are part of the resistance. But in the broader sense, it includes global public opinion, which has turned against the Israeli regime. The Israelis have angered they have outraged people across the globe, in China, in our region, across the global south. This is, I think, something that will be much more costly than any military defeat on a battlefield. So this resistance against the Israeli regime is growing, both at the regional level and at the global level, but also the axis of resistance that supports the people of Palestine, along with the resistance in Gaza, they are the only elements, they are the only factors that will prevent the Israeli regime from destroying the people of Gaza.
So since we're on the topic of the Palestinian resistance, I wanted to ask you about the battlefield situation, because Netanyahu has recently claimed that Israel has destroyed up to 3/4 of Hamas's fighting force and predicted that the fighting in Gaza would be over within 2 months. Do you buy that assessment?
No. He has failed in this war. The resistance in Gaza has preserved 90% of its capabilities. Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader, yesterday actually pointed that out. And his information, obviously, is very credible. So the Israelis have failed. And the resistance in Gaza continues to receive the supplies that it needs to carry out the defense against the regime. They have no shortage of personnel. They have no shortage of ammunition or weapons. And the area in the south is far more difficult for the Israeli regime to penetrate than anywhere else in Gaza. So the regime has failed. And if they enter Rafah, the defeat will be even greater than what we've seen before. But in addition to that, the sheer number of people who will be massacred will be greater than what we've seen before. And the global outrage is far greater than what many people seem to think in the West. And this is destroying the regime. It has destroyed the credibility of the West. It's destroyed the image of Western regimes that have always claimed to be the staunch supporters of human rights and human values. That's turned out to be nonsense. They are the greatest violators of human rights. They have, for centuries, been carrying out the greatest atrocities that this planet has ever witnessed, whether in Latin America or Africa or Asia or North America. But the atrocities that we're now seeing being carried out in Gaza, as I said earlier, are being carried out in front of a global audience. So the military defeat that the Israeli regime will face will be greater than what they suffered already. And the catastrophe that the world will witness will be greater than the catastrophe that is ongoing. I don't think this situation will be sustainable for that much longer, for more than a few more months. And I think that it will ultimately lead to the globe, the world, seeing the Israeli regime as illegitimate, as morally illegitimate, something that many have already been saying for years. But now a global audience is witnessing its behavior, and increasingly people are drawing that conclusion. And that damage to the regime is irreversible, and is much greater than any benefit it gets by massacring all these Palestinians. We do know that the Israelis always had a policy of massacring ordinary people. We saw it in the previous attack on Gaza, when they would regularly call it mowing the grass. When they would attack Lebanon, they would use what they called the Dahiya doctrine. In other words, Dahiya is a neighborhood in southern Beirut. Level it to the ground. In other words, massacre ordinary people. That's a policy of the Israeli regime, whether in Gaza or elsewhere. But now the world is being exposed to the atrocities of the Israeli regime in a way in which they've never been exposed before. In the past, Western media would always create cover for the regime. But now the atrocities are so great that Western media is not able to hide what's going on. So while the pain and suffering of ordinary Palestinians will increase, the military defeat of the Israeli regime in Gaza is inevitable, and the moral defeat of the West in the eyes of the world is inevitable as well, and people will conclude that the Zionist regime is morally illegitimate.
I want to remind our audience members that you are watching and listening to the New Rules podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Symes Jr., and our guest today is Professor Saeed Mohammed Marandi. You know, your answer reminded me of something that former MI6 officer analyst Alistair Crook said on this program about a month ago. He said that the mistake that a lot of Israeli analysts and that Western analysts made is that they viewed Hamas through the prism of conventional military strategy, whereas the group is pursuing more what he called a revolutionary strategy, where the goal is not to necessarily score wins on the battlefield, but to completely disrupt the existing paradigm. And indeed, when you look at how the world has changed since October 7th, it seems that they've succeeded in that overall political objective.
Yes, I think the resistance, and this is not just Gaza, this is Hezbollah, which began this form of resistance, of course, with support from Iran. And this also exists in Yemen, but we should also include Iraq and Syria. What they've done is that they knew that they could not defeat the West or Western proxies like Israel or client regimes like Israel in a conventional war, because these countries were all too fragile. They didn't have the money and the resources to do so. So they began investing in high-tech weapons that were inexpensive, such as anti-tank missiles, such as drones, and such as missiles, surface-to-air missiles, surface-to-sea missiles, and surface-to-surface missiles, precision-guided missiles as well. So, on the one hand, their Western antagonists were paying much more money, and the resistance were building up their defense capabilities with a much smaller budget. On the other hand, in order to prevent the effectiveness, the Western Air Force, or the American Air Force, or the Israeli Air Force, of being effective, or their artillery from being effective, or from their tank fire from being effective, they began to build underground defense. So in Gaza, we see that there are hundreds of kilometers of tunnels, and the Israelis have no idea what to do about it. The resistance pops up behind Israeli lines, kills a few soldiers, destroys a tank, and then they disappear in their tunnel. And that tunnel is gone. So they have small tunnels, they have major tunnels, they have a huge and sophisticated network of tunnels that the Israelis don't know what to deal with. The same is true in Yemen. The Yemeni armed forces, they have mobile radar, they have missiles, they have drones. They come out of their tunnel network. Within minutes, they fire missiles at American ships or British ships or Israeli ships. They destroy the ship or damage the ship, and they're back in their tunnels within minutes before American aircraft can locate them. They're gone. The same is true in Lebanon. The difference between Lebanon, of course, and Gaza is that Hezbollah is capable of easily bringing in large numbers, large quantities of very sophisticated weapons, because unlike Gaza, it's not surrounded. It can bring in new weapons from the sea, it can bring it from the air, and it can bring it from Syria. So Hezbollah has highly developed capabilities, which if the Israelis launch a war, can devastate Israel. And we have to keep in mind that if the Israelis launch a war on Lebanon, a war of aggression, like we've seen before, Lebanon does not have much infrastructure. It's a country that has not seen foreign investment for decades, thanks to the Israeli regime. But Israel has many sensitive sites, both economic and military, that can be easily destroyed. Their gas production, their ports, their refineries, their power plants, and all their other installations are easily accessible to Hezbollah. Whereas, what are the Israelis going to bomb in Lebanon, except for homes and apartments, to massacre ordinary people? There isn't much else for them to destroy. So the Israeli regime is very vulnerable, whereas the resistance has been able to, through this new form of resistance, which was devised by General Soleimani and his colleagues, the Israelis, because of this defense mechanism, because of this defense strategy that has been pursued by the collective resistance, the Israeli regime and the Americans will find it very difficult to wage any kind of war. They spent a lot of money on weapons that are useless, and they are extremely vulnerable because their antagonists will be able to hit them and go back into their underground bases.
So it's worth noting that the U.S. intelligence community released a report recently where they predicted that Hamas would be able to continue offering armed resistance to Israel for years to come. Does that seem like a likely scenario for you? Are we going to see this conflict drag on for years?
It will drag on until the Israeli regime ends it and stops. The side that has lost is the Israeli regime. Private investors from China, from Asia, are never going to invest in Israel. Israeli prestige has been destroyed. Its technology has been shown to be inadequate. They have always pretended that their high-tech technology, that their high-tech products and weapons and surveillance systems are the best in the world. They were attacked on October, their military installations were attacked and destroyed on October the 7th, and they knew nothing. They didn't know what was going to happen. And their weapon systems have been proven to be ineffective in defeating a small area called the Gaza Strip. Their prestige, therefore, in the military sense, is destroyed. And from a moral perspective, the world looks upon Israel with disgust. But no one is going to invest in Israel anymore. Maybe some American companies would like to do so because of ideological reasons and under duress. But the era of investment in Israel is over. The era of tourism like it was before is over. No one wants to go and spend their time in a place where people carry out genocide. The era of Israeli high-tech goods being exported across the world, that's over as well. People will be looking for better sources. They'll be looking to those countries that have actually provided the resistance with their weapons. And that's why Iranian military exports have shot up. They shot up fivefold, I think, in the last 2 years. So this has been a catastrophe for the regime, and I don't believe that it is sustainable. I think that this is a dying regime, and I don't believe that it will exist in the years to come. It may last a few more years, but I don't expect it to last that much longer. But ultimately, the only solution for the whole of Palestine is a land where Christians, Muslims, Jews live as equal human beings alongside one another. A ethno supremacist state, it will never be accepted by the region or the international community or the Palestinian people. Thank you.
Since we're on the topic of sustainability, another interesting prediction that I found in the U.S. Intel report is that once this crisis subsides, the U.S. Intel community expects the Netanyahu government to fall and be replaced by a more moderate government. Given if that's the case, are you worried about the possibility of Netanyahu trying to potentially widen the conflict in order to find a pretext to remain in power?
I think there are really two things here. One is that there is no more moderate faction in the Israeli political order. Overwhelmingly, Israelis believe in carrying out genocide. They support genocide, and the political parties support genocide. So ultimately, when Netanyahu is brought down, it's not going to be a moderate that replaces him. It will be a genocidal politician like himself. However, since Israelis will have lost the conflict, the West or elements within Israel may try to depict this new politician, this new prime minister, as moderate so that they can escape conflict, so that they can end the conflict somehow and look like this is just Netanyahu's fault and make it look that way. So it is a possibility that someone will place Netanyahu in the not so distant future, but that somebody, whoever that person is, will be just as genocidal. But he will be presented as a moderate so that they can end the conflict sometime. But let us assume that Netanyahu, to prevent his own downfall, escalates, which is quite likely, whether it's in Gaza or whether it's in Lebanon, or both. He will lose. Israel will definitely lose. As I said earlier, Hamas and Islamic Jihad have preserved 90% of their defense capabilities, and they are continuing to bring in new resources and train new people. And in Lebanon, Hezbollah is much more powerful than the resistance in Gaza. So if Israel escalates, they will lose militarily. It will only get worse for the region. It will only get worse for the Israeli people. So through escalation, Netanyahu is looking or will be looking for a path to escape defeat. But the only thing that he will be effectively doing is making the defeat even worse. Every day that this genocide continues makes the situation worse for the Israeli region. The resistance, the axis of resistance, the collective resistance, wants a ceasefire immediately. However, the side that really needs a ceasefire more than anyone else is the Israeli side. Because every day that this genocide continues, the anger and hostility of the global community is only going to be cemented. It's only going to strengthen. If the Israelis had ended these atrocities after a month and declared some sort of victory, it would have been much smarter for them. But they chose the most foolish and stupid path by continuing this genocide and creating global antagonism towards the region. And by intensifying the war, they're only going to make things much, much worse for themselves and for the West, because every Palestinian child that is murdered, every single one, the blame falls on the shoulders of politicians in Washington, London, in Brussels, in Paris, in Berlin, and across North America, Europe, and Australia. All of them will be blamed. They cannot recover from this catastrophe that they've created for decades.
A couple weeks ago, the Israeli defense minister made, I think, a pretty stunning statement, declaring that even if a ceasefire in Gaza would be reached, that Israel would continue attacking Hezbollah. And it sort of seems that the ultimate endgame here is to force Hezbollah out of southern Lebanon, away from the border with Israel. Is that a feasible objective whatsoever?
No, the defeat will be much greater than the defeat that they've experienced in Gaza. The Israelis will lose their key assets across the country. The Hezbollah will target all of their key installations everywhere. And their tunnel networks are far more extensive than what we see in the small territory called the Gaza Strip. Israel cannot win this war. It's clear as day. They know it too. If you and I know it, they know it. If your audience knows it, they definitely know it. But Netanyahu is not fighting for the interests of the regime. Netanyahu is fighting for to preserve himself, to preserve his own premiership. He doesn't want to go to jail. And therefore, he needs this war to continue for as long as possible so that somehow he can escape what awaits him. And by doing so, he is leading both Israeli regimes to a greater and more catastrophic defeat but also he's leading the collective West to a greater and catastrophic situation.
I want to remind our audience members that you watched and listened to the New Rules podcast. I'm your host, Dimitri Symes Jr., and our guest today was Professor Saeed Mohammed Marandi. Professor Marandi, where can our audience members go to keep up with your work?
My Facebook account was shut down years ago. Apparently, someone friendly to me has created his own account. And my Instagram account was shut down years ago as well. So all I have left is a Twitter.
And if you want to keep up with our work, make sure to follow us on X, on Rumble, like our videos, subscribe. Thank you all for tuning in. Till next time.